It's not about me. Forget that I don't like it. It's for the child. It's to help them in any way that I can. Welcome back to Teacher Tales, where we give you the keys to overcoming teacher burnout to find work-life balance and educational bliss, if it still exists. On this interview episode of Teacher Tales, self-care and advocacy take center stage. Discover the art of recognizing burnout signals early in the school year and the transformative power of prioritizing self-care to navigate the ever-evolving landscape of education. Finally, gain insights into the importance of advocating for students and creating a supportive school environment that takes care of everyone. Sharita, I don't even know is the last name anymore because you're married.
I know, Watkins.
So, Sharita, please tell us the winding road and where you're teaching and how'd you get there?
So I teach in Detroit Public Schools Community District. How I got there is a funny story. So when I was in undergrad, I started out at community college. Then I transferred to Saginaw Valley, and my major was education. But with school, I started running out of money, and I needed to graduate. So I was like, well, I'm just going to major in communications. And I had enough credits to major in history, too, so I got a double major. Then I took a job at Quicken Loans, which is now Rocket Mortgage. And that was like the worst thing in my life. But I sat there every day looking for jobs, like at work looking for jobs. And I came across an article talking about Inkster Public Schools shut down. And then I came across another article saying Detroit Public Schools were kind of bankrupt. And they had an emergency manager, who, by the way, I did work under. And he also got caught up in, like, the Flint water crisis. But anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I went in one day to my job at Quicken Loans, like, maybe an hour before my shift started. And I quit. And then I went to apply at Detroit Public Schools. And here I am.
So you started off in college for education. What made you go down that path?
I always wanted to be a teacher, like, since second grade. Like, that was just my career. Like, I'm going to be a teacher when I grow up. And I stuck to that until I did. And then I went back.
I guess what was it about being a teacher that just caught your eye or intrigued you so much that you just knew? Because second grade is very early to know what to exactly know what you want to do. So what was it about being a teacher?
School was always like my outlet. Like, I think it gave me an opportunity to showcase my quote unquote talents. Like, as a kid, I always was a reader, a writer. And like in my home life, that wasn't, I don't want to say accepted. Like, of course, my parents liked that I read, but it just wasn't something that they enforced.
Celebrated.
Right, or celebrated, yeah. And having teachers who, you know, they show that they care. And it's like, oh, I want to do this. Like, this is, I want to, like, I don't know if you ever had this happen. Like, you're in the classroom teaching, you have those kids who say, I want to go home with you. That was kind of me. I was one of those kids. I want to go home with you. You're so nice. I just want to go home with you.
Wow. Well, being a high school teacher, I don't want to hear those words.
I totally forgot. See, I teach kindergarten, so I get that.
So it's different.
Yeah, it's a lot different.
What are the things that you saw from the outside, I guess, growing up as a kid and going to school? And then, like, now you can flip it over. And on the inside, you're like, oh, okay, this is not exactly what I thought it was, you know, because as a kid, like, we're growing up, we're going to school. And I know the one thing a lot of people always complain about, which we didn't, because, like, we couldn't see the grades all the time like you can now. But kids are always complaining about grades. Like, when you gonna put that grade in? Usually these are the people who have turned stuff in late. So leave me alone if you turned your work in late. But What's one of those things like being on the other side now as a teacher, you can see it like for what it really is?
Like growing up, I never understood or even knew how demanding the profession is. It's like you would really drive yourself insane if you try to do everything all at once. And just like you were talking about the turning in things late, first off, I commend you for accepting late work because some people don't. Unfortunately, I'm not in a grade level where we grade children. You know, right. They just, can they do this or they can't? But I do miss being in upper grades where I did have those students who would be begging me about turning in late work or makeup work or anything like that. But yeah, I never understood like what really went into teaching. I thought like the teacher just comes to the classroom and here's the lesson. And they were just super creative to create this. I didn't know that they had to teach to the like standards, or I guess when we were in school, it was like glickies. I didn't understand like all of the coaching and stuff they had to go through, professional developments. And yeah, I didn't get that part, but I'm getting it now.
So how long have you been a teacher, and what grades have you taught, and what different, if you had any different roles like a coach or a sponsor, what of those have you had to do?
Okay. So you know how we always count everything in school years. So calendar years is 8 years, but school years is like 8.5 because I came in January. So like that second semester is when I started. I started out at first grade. And then I switched to a different school. And actually, I want to go back. I started out teaching at the school that I went to for elementary. So that was pretty awesome. And then I transferred to a different school and I taught fifth grade self-contained. And then I did a fourth, fifth grade ELA social studies, like team teaching with someone else. And then I got moved to middle school. Middle school social studies. It was not my favorite year. Yes, not my favorite year. Not the worst, but not my favorite. And then I got out of the classroom for a year, and I focused more so on data and test scores and how to, I don't know. They always call me like data driven. So
like a testing coordinator?
Kind of, sort of. But I also provided like reading intervention to those students who were severely low. Or they call them tier three students. And then after that, I went back into the classroom and I did fourth grade, where I was co-teaching with someone else. And I taught ELA. I always teach ELA and social studies. And then COVID happened. And I had to finish that up online with those students. So I got cheated out of that year. And then I started kindergarten online virtually. That was my first year teaching kindergarten, and then I've been teaching kindergarten ever since.
So you've done a lot of different stuff as far as classroom teaching, in class, out of class. So you talked about before how you didn't know how much work had to go into being a teacher. So we're going to jump into, I guess, this kind of burnout, time management, work-life balance piece. How have you had to deal with those things, especially you being married and being the mother? Like, we haven't even talked about how the classroom life can affect those.
Yeah, it's a hard transition. Just thinking about when I started, I was not married. I was not a mother. You know, it was just me and my cat at my house. So I would bring a lot of stuff home. And then that changed once I, you know, became a wife, became a mother. I'm not taking stuff home. Managing my time is I utilize every prep I'm given. I'm not talking like I see some people just on their prep, just taking a break away from it. I guess they need that mental break. But me, I'm like getting stuff done because I'm like, I'm not staying after school to do this. I have to go home. I have to get my kids together and things like that. But like the time management part, I still struggle with that a lot. And I know like I'm getting better. But I think that, of course, there's room for growth there. It's really the man. It's such a lot. Like now they always implement something new that you have to do. That's the most difficult. It's like, can we just stick to one thing? It was working. Right. Why do we have to change? So now they have this thing called IRIPS, and it's a state, it's mandated through the state, and it's to provide intervention to those tier three students. But I teach mm-hmm. kindergarten, so most of my students are tier three. So it's like, they're all going to get this intervention, but you have to send home this document. It's a legal document. The parents have to agree to this, and then you have to put all this information to the computer so it can get turned over to the state. That's why, like, kindergarten is a struggle for me, because sometimes I think, like, what is the point? Like, I understand, like, they have to take the district test, and then we take it at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and end of the year. And that's just them measuring against themselves. Like, I get that. But, like, the rest of it that goes into it is, like, what's the point?
So how, like, perfect. When you get to these moments when you're like, this is so stupid. What is the point of this? Like, how do you then get over that hurdle, right? Because we all have a job to do. And me, my thing is paperwork. I don't like doing paperwork at all. Like, I love teaching. I love lesson planning, putting together different projects. That stuff is my jam. But when you say I got to do, like, some paperwork and turn it in for the district, I'm like, oh, somebody, can y'all do this for me? I'll do your lesson plan if you do my paperwork.
Right.
So how do you get over that hurdle?
Oh, that's a struggle. Because I'm kind of like you, similar. I don't like the paperwork. And this is the first year that I feel like a special education teacher. I have so much paperwork, so many READ meetings, so many eligibility meetings, so many IEP meetings. And it's me and the psychologist emailing each other over and over in the aspect team. Like, I've never seen this, especially in the kindergarten class, where I have 10 students who receive special education services or who are on their way to receive special education. It's just like, oh my gosh, I've never encountered this in my life or in all of my time with the district. But yeah, the paperwork is exhausting. And to get over the hurdle, I just have to think about, it's not about me. Mm. None of this is about me. Forget that I don't like it. It's, you know, it's for the child. It's to help them. And in any way that I can. I actually just had this conversation with my assistant principal. We just got out on break too. They made us go all the way to Friday, but I think this was Wednesday. Dang. Here I talked. I know they're like, you don't do all these days. You want 2 weeks off. But I was telling him that sometimes I feel like I'm advocating for my students more than their parents are advocating for them. So I'm on top of, because if you, well, maybe not in the district where you work, but in the district where I am, if you let stuff slide, it's kind of like you have to make these people earn a paycheck. Because they'll just leave these kids in the classroom just struggling. And it's not fair to them. So I have to take my feelings out of it. It's not about me. It's all about them. Like, that's why I'm here.
I would say in the district that I work in, it's the opposite, but to the extreme. A lot of times what you see is these parents holding these kids' hand to where the kid has no room to do anything. Like, they're always emailing and calling and talking to you on their behalf. They want to protect their child from any kind of adversity. So now the child doesn't ever learn how to deal with adversity because their parent is always saving them from it. And so now you have kids that go out into the workforce and that go off to college who are not mentally prepared to speak up for themselves, you know, to advocate when they feel like something is unfair. They have not been equipped with the skills because they are always being saved, you know. So it's important for kids to learn how to advocate and to, you know, to speak up for themselves and to learn how to become more mentally tough. Because the only way that happens is to go through these situations, to go through the fires, you know, to have the experiences. And so I'll flip that, you know, because as a teacher, I feel like the only way to become a good teacher is you do have to also go through those different experiences and go through those fires and, you know, go through I'm not going to say like getting in trouble or getting written up, because there's some stuff that you shouldn't be doing anyway. But I remember there was a kid that wanted, or a parent that wanted their kid grade changed. And so I had this back and forth with my assistant principal. We was really just trying to figure it out. And he was like, well, did you say this? And did you communicate this? And I was like, it's like, that's where they're going to get us. So in that situation, I had to just take that L. I had to get the student some work to do when the grade got changed or whatever. But after that situation happened, I was like, okay, that's not going to happen again. So now my process is tightened up. So I would say for you, have you ever been in a situation like that where there's something that you had to go through so that you could have the experience to make you a better teacher?
Absolutely. And I want to kind of say this to you, is that you think that, or maybe you don't think, but what you see in high school about the parents not allowing their children to take accountability, that starts all the way back in kindergarten. Starts there. Those parents, they're not, what they're doing is not new. It's just a habit that they created. So they're going to advocate for their child even when they're 26 years old. And then you have these kids living in their parents' basements or whatever, because they were never really allowed to be self-sufficient. To answer your question, yes, I learn from experience. Like, it's like, okay, that's something I can't do, you know. And then you have to know your kids, and you have to know those families. And it's like, with some parents, it's like, okay, you and I see eye to eye. And this lady, she's going to be super difficult for no reason. So you just really have to know the parent who you're dealing with. You have to know the student who you're dealing with. And like, some things are just case by case. But yeah, I do learn. I have made a lot of mistakes. I grow from them. I learn from them. And I know that that doesn't work. Or, you know, it's a better way to do something, a better way to handle a situation. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of like getting through all of the issues and stuff that comes with teaching, who's someone that really helped you? Like, who's that person that's like ride or die for you? That person that's always in your corner to get you through, you know, burnout or parent issues or whatever the case may be?
This is going to sound really crazy, because I know a lot of teachers who work at a lot of different schools don't have this type of support, but my principal. He's been there ever since I started there. He started out as the assistant principal, and he's the person who will see me and he's like, is there anything I can do to help? He'll step in, he'll go to bat for all his teachers. You know, I have parents come in, they go beat me up, they go do all this stuff. Like, I'm not doing anything to your kid. You're mad because I'm holding them accountable. Not going to coddle them. I'm just not going to do that, because it's unrealistic. That's not going to happen in the real world. And it's like, why would I even set them up for that, you know, false reality?
Man, it's good to have people like that in your corner.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked for some admin who was just, ugh. Where I used to make my stomach hurt just going to work because I couldn't deal with them or didn't want to deal with them.
What did you do in those situations?
Oh, okay. So my first year, my first semester, because I didn't do a whole year there, I had the wackiest principal ever. I don't know if this lady was messing with me. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt like I was being hazed. Like, I don't know. And then, like, everybody kept warning me about her, like, she's a doozy. But with her, with that situation, like I said in the beginning of this, is that I went to that elementary school as a child. So the secretary in the office was there when I was a child. And I went there since the age of 3. And, you know, so I just clinged to those people. And then the 6th grade teacher used to be my teacher. The 5th grade teacher was student teaching when I was a student there. So it was like, I just kind of
built a relationship with those people, and we kind of, you know, leaned on each other. And then in another circumstance is when I was at the school that I am now, we had an assistant principal, and I don't know, like, he just, you know how you feel like some people have it out for you? And I'm like, what did I do to this man? Like, he just does not like me. And I'm like, I do my job. Like, my students are good. My classroom management is awesome. Like, why is he picking with me? But he had a lot of issues, and it had nothing to do with me. So,
yeah, sometimes we have to disconnect. Like, this person has their own stuff going on. I'm just kind of catching some of it. But if we can, I guess, detach ourselves from the situation, like, okay, like, whatever that was, it doesn't really mean nothing. It doesn't say anything about my character. That's their own stuff. So, you know, let's keep it moving.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure this part you will appreciate. This is the last part where we get to our five W's. So I'm going to let you choose who, what, when, where, why. Which one you want to start with?
Why?
Why do people quit teaching?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, whoa. How much time do we have? All right. I don't know why I started with this. Okay. Lack of support. Oversized classrooms. Not having a sense of community when it comes to education. They have a feel that some people don't value education. Let's see, the burnout. Like, I had teacher burnout in September. I've never had that before. But yeah, not the pay. That's another one. But I don't know. I don't really want to say the pay, because nobody gets into education and think they're going to be rich. So
I feel like the pay is underrated. Like, so, because some people stay in education because they're getting that steady paycheck, and then they get those vacations, you know. So I think that all kind of goes together. Mm-hmm. And then when people talk about the pay, it also varies depending on what state you're in and what district you work in as well.
Right.
So that can vary a little bit, but yeah, you named a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Why people leave. Okay. Next W. You got who, what, when, or where?
Let's go with the who.
Who's the student you'll remember forever?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's so complicated. This is the hardest question yet. You know how many students I've had? Oh my goodness. I did have a student in my first year at the school where I am. He would be 18 going on 19 next year. And he was in my fifth grade class, and he was a high flyer. He was always in trouble. But I will always remember him forever, because his home life was so unfortunate. And I remember his grandmother, I could have just choked her when she asked me this. She asked me in front of him, "Do you want to adopt him?" And I was like, why would you ask me that in front of a child? So, yeah, like, I always wonder where that kid is to this day. Like, where is he?
Dang.
Yeah.
That's a weird question.
I know.
Okay. We have what, when, and where.
When.
When did you begin to feel confident in yourself as a teacher? It's my favorite question.
And this is going to sound really weird. After all these years, this year is the first year I felt completely confident. Like, remember I told you about advocating for those students? I have gotten into it with people in central office, and I don't even care. And I'm very unapologetic, because when it comes to those kids in my classroom, I'll just go to war with you. That's just pretty much it. So, yeah, this year.
Sounds I've good.
Spoken up. Made enemies.
What was it? What was it that, like, turned that switch for you? Where you go, you know what? I don't care. I'm doing this.
I think is, remember I was telling you how my son is in my classroom, and it's like, I would want someone to go to bat for my child. So I'm just going to have to be the villain or vigilante. I don't know.
Okay. The anti-hero.
Yes.
Okay, so we have what and we have where.
Let's do what.
What's your favorite lesson to teach?
I love anything writing. If I was an upper L, teaching them the writing process, like just going through the elements, the drafts, the edits, allowing them to collaborate with one another. That's my favorite. I love that.
We have where? Yeah, we have where. Where'd you see yourself 5 years ago? Are you there or did it change along the way?
5 years ago, I just wanted to teach fourth grade. I thought I was going to retire as a fourth grade teacher and never teach anything else. It did change for me because I've been put into kindergarten classroom year after year now. And I don't know what my principal sees in me. And I guess like some people, I guess, can see things that you don't see in yourself. But I do not think I'm the best kindergarten teacher. He thinks I'm just like the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't see it.
Okay, last thing. What advice do you have for a new teacher? And what advice do you have for an experienced teacher?
Okay, so my advice to a teacher, a first-year teacher, or someone thinking about going into education would be just be yourself. Do what you think is best for your class. Close your door and teach. Like, whatever's going on in the classroom next to you, that's not your business. And don't try to adapt other people's personalities. It's not authentic. It's not you. It will not work for you. It's going to cause more chaos than anything. My advice for a veteran teacher, it's okay to change. Like, you know, you can't compare, you know, what happened in 1999 to what's going on today. Like, these children, it's not like that, you know, I hear the term all the time, like, these kids are just different. It's not that they're different. Like, things are different. Everything around us is different. You just have to adapt with the time.
That's really good. I agree with that. I would say even the kids from 5 years ago are different than the kids now. So being able to be adaptable is very important. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation between me and Sharita. It was a pleasure having her on, as I knew it would be. Before we leave, remember, number one, don't ignore the signals of burnout. It manifests differently in all of us. Number two, education is evolving. We must evolve with it to bring our best self to our children and our coworkers. Lastly, don't be afraid of conflict. It's necessary for growth, and it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. Thank you for listening. Keep teaching, keep learning, and I will see you all on the next journey.